Greetings, this is James Gilligan with As You Wish Talk Radio, and I've got Peter Maxwell Slattery here and his beautiful mate Solrita. And we're doing another show, another joint show. And I wanted to talk a little bit about our adventures here. We've been out to Uluru and, Katajuta. Yeah, Katajuta. It's just been amazing. We've seen all kinds of wildlife and the energies are off the scale here. But we wanted to talk a little bit about, and you know, it's important to cover this, is that all the tourists that come to these places have no idea. You know, they come and see these beautiful, sacred places and really have no idea about what's really happened here in the past and the energies that are still here. And so I thought it was important that we talked a little bit about that. I'm going to turn over to Solrita here, and she can talk about her, what she felt when she first got here. We all kind of felt the same thing.
Yeah, so I guess straight off into getting into the main part of town, I just felt a real deep kind of sadness and kind of like a repressed feeling within the heart, just to do with the people. And over here we call it the stolen generation, because there was a lot of Indigenous Aboriginal children that were taken from their parents when white people started to, I guess, move into the country and take over. So a lot of these children were removed from their parents and put into Christian schools and places like that, different ministries and things. Is there anything that you wanted to add to it?
Yeah, like basically white man comes here and where things have began as the Strongs have gone into, and we get, you know, we bring disease, we give them crap food, we give them alcohol, we give everything that, you know, nobody really should have. And it's just disgusting, as I've talked to you, both of you, about. It's almost like some of the original people here on parade, which is a shame. And I know that they don't want that. You can feel that with the energy in the township.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, come to, you know, Uluru and come to Katajuta and oh, you know, here's the original people, here's this and that, here's boomerangs. And it's just like people are just seeing the front. And we've had Sorry Day and all that done a few years back, which to me doesn't mean a darn thing. And this is where there needs to be something else done, no matter what it is. But in saying that, these energies are here, so you come here and you can, it's almost like everything is vibrating and rainbow iridescent, very beautiful energies, but at the same time in certain parts there's very dark energies and very repressive energies and very
it's affected generations.
So there's a two-part thing to that here, and it's just disgusting what's been happening to the people. And this is where there needs to be forgiven on both sides to get with the program, but it needs to be recognised what the white person's done to this country and the culture here as well. So, anything you want to add to that? I was actually talking to Brendan Murray, Ulukai Brendan Murray, the King of the Raven Tribe, today about this. From Melbourne. And we'll be getting him back on both James' show and this show as well, my show as well. So I just think that's something that should be covered, and there should be respect given, and the regional people need to be recognised in this area.
Yeah, it's kind of like a field of energy that's overlaying the area. And, you know, there needs to be some way of lifting this field, and the only way... Is that going on?
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
The only way of really straightening this out, it seems to be, is some major, like, reconciliation, like truth and reconciliation. Some kind of, you know, yeah, they had Sorry Day, but I'm sorry, it probably wasn't enough.
It doesn't,
you know?
No, it doesn't cut it. Yeah,
wasn't
it doesn't
enough,
cut it, yeah.
Because, I mean, the people are still really, it's sad, because you'll see them, you know, doing their paintings, you know, for the tourists and things like that. And you stand there and you look at them, and they're just so beaten down and so sad. It's so sad.
Yeah.
It's just like, the life's gone. And, you know, I don't know how you'd repair that, actually. You know,
Sorry's not going to cut it overnight,
no,
sort of thing.
No, it's,
you know, and a bit
be,
of money as well.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you're going to have to give them a lot of their land back and reintroduce the old ways. But they have a lot to teach us. The nuclear family that's been generated now, without any ceremonies. You know, there's no rites of passages. There's no real family where you have the extended families and, you know, the village type consciousness where everybody works together, you know, and the children are raised by the village. Things like that, you know, they have a lot to teach in those ways. And just ceremonies around being conscious about everything you do and respectful to life and getting everything you can out of something, you know, and being told not just throwing everything away, you know, and like most people do. But you know, it's really interesting watching that. You have to excuse the flies here. It's,
and the birds are everywhere.
Yeah.
I think that's galahs going in the background, the pink and gray galahs.
Yeah, they're mating actually right now. So
I just wanted to add, wanted to add quickly too that if you do come to these areas, the indigenous areas, if you buy anything, like especially art and things, make sure that money's going back to the people because there's sort of a lot of Chinese, stuff.
You'll see a sign on the back saying that 100% profits and proceeds go back to the indigenous communities and that they're made by indigenous artists here that are local.
Yeah,
we picked up a lot of boomers. I saw this really nice boomerang. I go, oh, I'd like to play with this one. And then we pulled this boomerang out and it says made in China on the back.
Yeah.
I go, oh man, you know, and then, but I found another one that was made by the locals. It was actually more aerodynamic. It was a lot nicer.
Yeah.
And you boys noticed, like, with that, spear that you guys held to, how balanced it was? You were balancing on
one finger. I was balancing
on
one finger, it's very crafty and hardcore tools they've got as well.
Yeah, we got to hold all of their spear throwing implements and their shields and play around with those, and it was amazing the different sticks they have. Like, most people think they throw a boomerang and it hits a kangaroo and comes back and they grab it in their hand or an animal. It doesn't really work that way. It's like the sticks are made to break, you know, break necks or bones or things like that. They're pretty heavy and they have hooks on them and things like that, so they can swing around when they hit something. And they're not designed to. Most of them are designed to come back to you. That's kind of like a myth. You know, they do have one. I think it's more of a toy.
Yeah, you know? It does do certain things and it's useful. But that's just really one of the things that's designed to do that.
Yeah. So if we talk about like a more positive aspect of being here, there's definitely been energies that we've felt both going to Uluru and Katajuta as well. Did you guys want to talk about maybe the male perspective of that and, you know, Uluru being more a male thing? What did you guys feel there?
You want to go first, James?
Well, when we went to Uluru, the energy there was just off the scale. I mean, it was very strong energy. And it was just amazing doing the hike around there and looking at all the caves. And I noticed one place, it was the Cave of the Elders, where the elders hung out. And even on the sign, it says, if you stare long enough, you'll start to see the elders manifest. And there's like a plasma energy there, a milky energy there, and they were manifesting, you know, their face. And I took a photograph of it, and you can see it almost looks like it's steam in there, like a real milky, photograph turned out real milky energy inside this cave. I'll have to blow it up and see if there's any faces in it, but you could definitely feel the energy. I know when I went there, I played my flute in there, and whenever I played my flute, I did it in a blessing, in a kind of a sacred way, and boy, you get a total download afterwards.
Yeah,
really enjoyed the flute, and I feel like a combination of things happened. Like, we brought some energies, you know, to the place, and we also got downloaded with some incredible energy, so all the Star Nation connections that we've been working with, we kind of brought a lot of those with us to help activate things, but we got super activated at the same time. But I don't know if you have anything to share to that.
Uluru was very, like the energy, it was mainly when I sort of went around the back coming into it, I absolutely got smashed and opened up, and that to me was a major point there, and there was major activity going on there. And the area you were speaking about, I was saying to you as well, like I could sense the energies there. There was a women's kitchen area that was in it that I just didn't even bother going into. I got thrown as a soul in there, but I was just like, I'm definitely not welcome in there. And then you said the same thing.
It felt good to me.
Yeah. Look, it, very very much a sacred and beautiful energetic area, but Katajuda was the main area for myself. Like, I got there and the whole friggin' thing, I could see the aura, and then, like, it was like I was looking at the thing in HD. It was vibrating.
Yeah.
The energies as we went in towards the middle just got so intense for all of us. Mm-hmm. And I could really see how the Uluru's the male energies and Katajuda's the female energies and the difference between them. But I think there's more, it's almost like Uluru's been the focus point as a decoy to go, all right, there's Katajuda over there, but this is what you want to focus on. I'm thinking, nah. Get your butt side over to Katajuda, because it was definitely energetic stuff, really intense for me anyway, more than Uluru.
Yeah, we all felt that. I mean, we're all talking about that. We wanted to do the trip, you know, and go see Uluru, you know, because, but all of us felt, you know, the real shift was going to happen at Katajuda.
Yeah.
And so, and definitely it did happen there. When I know there's one place where it was the, where was that? Wasn't the Valley of the Wind?
Valley of the Wind.
It was the first one we went
the
to.
The first one we went
the
to.
First one
we
went to.
That was
I'm not sure what that part's called, cool, but that was sort of the,
was
the
like
first part you guys
did.
Yeah.
And we went through, and you're like walking through right through this crack between two giant, giant mountains, and you're walking right through the middle of it. And when you get right to the middle, the energy between those two mountains, like, I even tried to take a picture. My phone just went crazy. You know, it went nuts.
And had weird things. Every time there's intense energy, your phone's played up.
Yeah, it just went scrambled, you know. And I had it on airplane mode and everything, you know. So it just, the energy just scrambled the photos. It wouldn't work. But I felt just an intense download there. And I noticed when we were playing the flute, too, the high notes really kind of triggered something in the flute. It opened a gate or something that you know, it was just really incredible energy. Some of the strongest magnetic energy I've ever seen. And some of the rocks there are broken in half, and they just look like dark red rock, you know. But when you break them open, they're full of copper, they're full of crystals, they're full of all these different elements. One was, it's kind of a pink crystal.
Yeah, it looks like rhodonite or rhodochrosite.
Yeah.
It's kind of got a bit of a quartz flicker through it.
And then
that's
green,
cool.
Green crystals.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and then some are iron, you know, just iron, but a lot of them were you know, black on the inside, almost like obsidian, like a kind of obsidian, but it was a lighter color. The rocks are very
heavy.
Very heavy rocks. So you can tell that they're generating a lot of energy. I found a rock like that at the ranch where I was using divining rods, and it kept going crazy over this one spot, and it would spin. I couldn't figure out what was down there, and I brought the backhoe and started digging a hole. And I pulled up these three rocks, and they were just like these rocks here. It's almost like they're thrown from the mountain in a volcano or something.
Yeah,
but and they just spun the divining rods like crazy. So, you know, obviously, a massive rock that big with that kind of energy in it, I'm sure it's just pumping out enormous amounts of energy.
Yeah, definitely copious amounts of it, and you know, we could sense that when we're there. Do you want to go into the female aspect of what you were sensing at both Uluru and Katajuda?
Yeah. So, because this is my third time here, so I went once when I was 1 year old, then again when I was 13, and I always remembered Katajuda. That was the one that stood out to me as a special one, and I remember my mum saying the same thing, because we actually flew in a light aircraft over the top.
Yeah.
So if you get the opportunity to do that, it's well worth it. When we went to Uluru first, and probably about 5 minutes into the walk, I had like a grandmother voice appear to me, and I just heard her saying Katajuda. So we knew that was an important part to go back and work with later.
Yeah.
But yeah, continued on the journey and listening to James play the flute, you know, while we were there, and just the acoustics of that was just amazing. And we got to the end of a little kind of, I don't know, like a canyon area.
You
played the flute, and then I just had to sit in that space for a bit afterwards, because there was some kind of like activation download going on. I had some star language come through as well, and I felt like it was as though part of that place or that area was kind of activating or adding to the experience in some way.
Yeah.
There was there was some kind of exchange going on, because it's kind of a two-way thing. You know, when you give music to something, or, you know, you make an offering, a lot of the time there's that exchange come back.
Yeah.
That was kind of what I experienced at Uluru. But going into Kata Judah, for me, that was just, it was like a coming home. It was just amazing. You can really feel like the indigenous energies, especially the female side of it. For me, I felt that. And just sensing like the women and children's energy of the place. Definitely a totally opposite experience to what we've felt and sensed with what's happened with the people in the town.
Yeah.
It was more a wholeness that you could feel there, and you could kind of have images in your mind of, you know, what it might have been like back in the day. So there's a lot of really concentrated bush fruit and bush food out there. So super concentrated that it's really high on the ORAC scale, which is used to measure antioxidants and things like that. So a lot higher than goji berries and things like that. Yeah.
The other thing too is, like you were saying, it's very much like Sedona here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost identical. I keep thinking I'm in Sedona while I'm here. The energy is very, very similar, and to the point where I have to keep telling myself I'm in Australia.
Australia.
They don't say Australia, they say Australia.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
The other thing too is, it's funny, I sense, not here, but there are some areas like trickster sort of energies. You hear the Native Americans talking, like you hear about Skinwalker Ranch and all that, but talking to some of the locals, they said that there's definitely some areas you just don't go, and when you ask why, it's more to do with just the energies or stuff that's in that area. It's not because of animals, it's because, you know, you just don't go in those areas. So it's very much a spiritual place, and what's going on with that. And what's funny is that we didn't realise, I think, until we were leaving to come here, was that it's the winter solstice for you guys and the summer solstice for us down here.
So it's your winter solstice today.
Yeah.
And it was our summer yesterday.
Yeah.
Also, too, with that, with Brandon, Ulukai Brandon, he's the king of the Raven tribe. And so since we've been here, we've had ravens following us wherever we go.
Yeah.
And the eagles.
Yeah, and I've always had eagles follow me whenever, especially whenever I'm on a journey or going somewhere important. And everywhere we've been, we've had at least 2-3 eagles.
And 2 ravens.
And 2 ravens. Yeah. Everywhere. It's just amazing. Mm-hmm. We pull up and there they are sitting there like waiting for us. And I thought it was interesting, right when we were leaving Kata Judah, something was in the bushes. I mean, we could feel an energy in there. And whatever it was making this really loud hiss noise and breaking branches and things like that. It was like pretty crazy. And these 2 ravens were there, and they were like in front of it. And we never saw it. We couldn't see what it was. But they were like squawking like crazy at it and like focused on it. So... Mm-hmm. So we still don't know what that was. You said you saw kind of a leg, almost like a
camel leg.
A camel leg or something.
It was see-through. It was like an energy thing, because you could sense the energies
in
that bush.
Yeah.
And the birds were... I felt like the whole journey, these birds have been like a protector to us. And I feel like it's them kind of like warding off stuff.
Yeah.
You know, if there's any energies and things that are, you know, going to try and interfere and mess, I feel like the birds are there as a protector.
It could have been, we don't know what, it could have been a giant, they have giant lizards here.
Yeah.
And all kinds of
could
things.
Have been a reptilian.
Or a reptilian. I have to admit, it was really bizarre. And you could really feel a forest. You could feel an energy there. And a lot of the legends here is that the different tribes will create animals. They'll create these animals to go attack another tribe. And they generate them in, I guess, the astral level or with their own psychic abilities. And there's a lot of stories about that. So it's not uncommon to see, you know, animals that will become invisible and turn visible. And they have those abilities. I mean, you have to acknowledge that. You know, you don't want to get on the wrong side of some of the chiefs.
No, definitely.
Or the elders, you know.
And how trippy is it just through walking around, meeting a lot of the original people here and hearing the stories, all comes back to the Pleiades again with a lot of the paintings here. And like, these different tribes.
And Orion.
And Orion as well. Yeah, so that's, you know, that's another interesting point with all that, I think.
Oh, the other thing that was interesting, speaking of stars, was we had a Skywatch last night and invited four of the locals that work up here to come and join us. So that was interesting. We had the first craft that showed up was a really beautiful sort of golden coloured craft that was one of the bigger ones. So everyone got to see their first lot of crafts last night.
They hadn't seen anything out there before.
No.
And we're sitting at dinner and I said, you're going to see crafts tonight. And it looked a bit weird. I would have looked a bit like a...
And for some reason, each time someone says that they're going to leave, and this happens at home as well, it's like they show up just to like captivate you, to keep you there a little bit longer.
Yeah.
So I think after saying we were leaving about three or four times, we had, you know, another one show up each time. So we were like, all right, we're really going to go now.
It's funny watching people go through the program, like, okay, that's a satellite, or that's, how do you know that's not a satellite? Or, and these things just power up, and they're huge, you know, and they're going, you know, north to south, which isn't really a track that most satellites take. And you know, it's very obvious, yeah, because they would, yeah, they wobble, they go, they'd side slip, and then, or they would just light up and then disappear. So it's very obvious that these weren't satellites. And we're very familiar with, you know, the space station and Evastat and the Iridium flares and all the other things. We're very aware of those, and we look things up, you know, and check and make sure that there wasn't any of these. So,
and people with me, even a lot of the time, I'll hand them the satellite tracker myself on the phone to go, you know, look at this yourself, just so they don't, you know, believe me or anything they can see. So, and it's important, but you do that just to help them. Like, over time now, we're sort of fed up with it because we know what we're seeing. But just for those new people and that, you've sort of got to go, all right, you know, you've got to do your discernment and teach people to be discerning themselves rather than just believe, you know, anything.
Well, a lot of people say, you know, they want to come up with all this heavy-duty equipment, and I say, by all means, come up, you know. And most of it's useless because they haven't been out trying to track anything or skywatch, you know, before. But, you know, the problem with that, it gets to a point where after 30 years of doing that and bringing out all the J-Tracker and Heavens Above and the computers and everything else, it really just gets old because you know, you can feel if it's a ship or not.
Yeah.
And you can watch them behave and just know. And you've been watching the sky for so long, you know all the major satellites and the space stations and things. So it gets to a point where you just go, you know, it's whatever you want it to be. You know, like we tell people, if you want to do the research, here's the stuff. You know, here's the computer. We'll bring it up for you. And they've done that redundantly. We had a funny incident. We had above top secret out at the ranch, and then we had MUFON out there at the same time. And this woman had this MUFON group. And she was jumping up, down, and screaming, these are satellites, you know. And after about 50, you know, she's still screaming, these are satellites. And I said, look, on J-Tracker right here, it says 1 to 3 visible satellites, you know, over Trout Lake, you know. And so, you know, and you can't see the other ones. They're not visible. And these are huge, you know, they're flying over. And so finally she's like freaking out. She goes, you need to go to Top Secret. You need to go to Top Secret. Well, Johnny Anonymous with Top Secret was there at the time with his setup and all his gear. And he goes, ma'am, he goes, I am Top Secret, and these are not satellites. He goes, well, here's the spread, you know. Here's the computers, here's the J-Tracker, here's Heaven Above, you know. And he goes, these are definitely not satellites. So it's kind of funny to watch that happen. And you get one group that just really wants to just prove and debunk everything, but they're not educated. They're not really educated. You know, they went to a couple classes and they got the hat, you know, and they got the card that says investigator, you know, and they come out and they try to act like they have some kind of authority or power, you know, over you or something. And we just laugh. And we said, you know, you're just beginning. You know, if you want to learn something, you need to, you know, express a little more humility here, you know, and be open to a different reality. But, you know, we always get those people. And like you've seen, too, I know that a lot of your footage, as well as mine, I mean, these ships are landing on the mountain, morphing into 3 or 4. We have jets chasing them. They appear. They make right angle turns at several thousand miles an hour. And these so-called experts that they bring out are still saying that they're satellites or the space station or things like that. And I said, well, you know, it's funny because the space station just landed on Mount Adams, and that's a really good trick. And it morphed into 3 and back to 1 again, you know. So if you want to stick by that, you know, who's being the fool here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but unfortunately with the mainstream media, they don't use critical thinking. You know, they go ahead, any bloke that shows up that has a degree, they're going to go, oh, this guy from NASA, you know, or this guy from somewhere else. And it's their job to debunk stuff, you know. It's their job to, NASA stands for never a straight answer, you know. That's
their job is to,
yeah,
I love that.
To cover it up. So anyway, we have had NASA people come out, and off the record, they looked at the footage and they saw the ships and they said, yeah, definitely, these aren't ours and they're not satellites. And I asked them, will you go on record? And they said, hell no, I'll lose my job. You know, I'll lose my job and I'll be followed for the rest of my life, you know.
Yeah.
No payout or they'll be screwed. But look, you've had people flock there in the thousands over the years. Like, you've had thousands of people go there. Not only is it the sightings and that, like you said, it's more like the bait to attract them, and then they get a greater understanding with the sessions that you do, whether it's, you know, clearings or, you know, working out the past life stuff, getting them connected to their guides and, you know, getting them to help themselves from there. You know, this isn't just a handful of people, you know, there's so much different testimony out there. We've been there ourselves and filmed crafts coming out of the mountain and experienced a lot of stuff going on. So, you know, it's not just, you know, James saying this or us saying it. You can go and talk to people from the world over that flock there, and it's almost like a yearning, a calling for them to go there.
Yeah.
And, well, you know, continues.
Yeah, I mean, when you see a ship, that's just the tip of the iceberg. That's to kind of spur you on to do deeper investigation. But usually when you see these ships, there's a connection that happens, an energetic connection. Yeah. And that usually drives people to find out more about it. And if you are seeing the ships, it usually means you are connected to them. You're part, on a soul level, that's your star family, or you have some connection there. So, you know, that's pretty much on a regular basis going on, where people come, they see the ships, and then they start asking the questions. And then they start going within, and they start finding out that, you know, they had lives in the Pleiades or the Orion system, or Arcturian or Andromeda or feline even, you know, like I'm brain farting now. Sirius, the Sirius system, you know. But they're in Lyra in the Sirius system too, the felines. And so, you know, this is a common thing, and people go, oh, now he's really getting off the deep end. He's talking about feline beings. You know, the problem is it's all throughout history. Sekhmet, you know, they're the protectors
and
of the gods.
Bast,
Yeah. And Nerissa is the protect. Nerissa is a big lion being, you know, huge lion being. He's got Lakshmi and the gods sitting on his, protecting them, you know, sitting on his lap. And there's all kinds of stories about praying to Narsringa, you know, villages that will pray to Narsringa, which are feline beings. And the bandits are coming, you know, to take over the village, and all of a sudden the bandits are knocked off their horses, their clothes are shredded, you know, and they get up and they run off, they run away. And it's because the Narsringa, they appear to them and just took care of business, you know?
Clean up.
So there's a long, long history of these beings as protectors, and they're here now in force, and they're here to protect the light workers and, you know, the other people. So they're 17 foot tall lion beings, and other ones that might be, you know, 12 foot tall, more like a panther type being, and then some are humanoid, you know, a little bit taller than we are, and humanoid cat beings that are here to assist now in this big shift. And they had to come because what humanity has been up against was just so bad and so heavy, you know, with all the draconian rule and the archons and everything else, that, you know, the big guns had to come in to help out, to give us a break, to clean this up.
We needed that assistance. It's like we've had to go through the first lot of battles in this incarnation lately to get the tools to be able to do what we're doing now, and
exactly
where things are going, they're jumping in, and that's sort of the similar stuff that we've been getting as well. But do you want to go into the solar flares at the moment? We've spoken about this, you and I, before. Actually, all of us have been speaking about it lately, but there's a huge component to the electromagnetic field ramifications from it. This is happening on multiple levels, but we've just been smashed. What is it, the last few days with...
Yeah, two big back-to-back mass ejections. Our solar flares came in and hit. And it's funny, they hit right on the solstice.
And
we feel them earlier because we're more sensitive. Yeah, so we feel the gamma ray burst, the first burst. So we always feel them early, and we start getting kind of knocked sideways, and your balance equilibrium gets a little bit off and everything. But they affect the bioelectric fields around the human body, and they throw everybody into process. And people get really irritable. They get spaced out. They're like, as you were saying, the drivers, you watch people driving and they don't even know where they're going. They're like all tweaked out and they're not paying attention. A lot of accidents happen during these times. But in a way, it's a blessing because it's creating change. And when these things hit, they create major changes within our fields and our consciousness, but they also create severe weather and an increase in earthquake and volcanic activity. And so the sun is expanding and doing its thing, and it's continued to expand. It's gone way past the 11-year cycle, and we're in a quickening stage, and it's part of the quickening stage. So,
yeah.
So it's... I'm going to find this picture. I have a beautiful picture of NASA taken from a pretty long distance, and it shows this total feedback loop between the sun and the Earth and an energy field that's really definable. And you know, the sun affects us, and we affect the sun. Mm-hmm. You know? So when we had all the wars, like World War I and World War II, we had the most severe weather we've ever had and the most solar flares and that we've ever had. So what we do affects the sun, and the sun's responding, you know, with energy. And it's hard for people to understand the sun is conscious, and the light coming from the sun is conscious. And now with the new technologies and new information, they're finding out that light transfers DNA. And so you can transfer DNA through a laser from a frog egg to a salmon egg. You can take a laser, shoot it through a salmon egg, hit the frog egg, and the frog will become a salmon. A salamander, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A salamander, you know, so... So you can, they have all this, they've proved over and over, and now with Dr. Nemoto's work, and he's the predecessor of Dr. Emoto, which I spent time in Japan with, now they're saying that water transfers DNA. So you can actually transfer DNA into water, and the water will transfer DNA to whatever objects are in the water.
Yeah.
You know, so you've got two methods of creating extreme DNA changes here, and... you know, it's undeniable now, the proof's in, that we are going through a massive shift, and that shift is affecting us all the way down to the DNA.
That's fascinating, too, with, you know, in the womb you live in, I think it's two sacks of water. There's one, you've got, like, your first one, you've got your hind water, and then the other water. And some babies, they say, I think it's in Greek myth or mythology, if you're born in the sack, you're like the blessed child. There's some kind of magical ability that you have. Yeah. And I've got a few friends that have had their babies born in the sack of water.
Nice.
Yeah. That's, it's quite rare.
That's the womb with the view.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So are we going on time here?
Yeah, we're going good on time. We've probably got about just under half an hour to go.
Wow.
Yeah. So okay. We've practiced with a lot of information already.
Yeah.
How are you finding Australia? Like... in general, just...
You know what's really interesting? When I came here, I was tweaked out. I was really messed up. I had some extreme attacks, you might say, from, you know, the Archon, the reptilian energies and grays, and shut down my whole left side. I mean, I couldn't use my shoulder. My arm was gone. My whole hip and leg and everything was just gone. And I couldn't even get out of bed. My knee was totally blown out. Before I left, and I said, I'm going anyway. Everybody goes, you're crazy, man. You're in no condition to go. And I said, well, you know, as much as they hit me with this stuff, the other beings heal me at the same time.
Yeah.
And so I knew I was going to meet, you know, wonderful people like you and other people and get some healing work done as well. So that was, you know, I kind of counted on that the healing would come if I just continued to do the work. And so it's been... up and down like that for years, you know, like, you know, the dark forces come in and slam you and knock you down, and then, you know, I'd get back up again, and they'd slam me again, and it's been a constant battle, you know. People don't realize there is a dark side of things, and it's sad with a lot of the New Age movement is they only see half the story,
mm-hmm.
you know, they deal with a half-truth, and everything is love and everything is light, and don't look at the darkness, it doesn't exist, and if you do, it's in you and everything else. Well, it was here before I was here, you know, and if I die tomorrow, it's still going to be here.
And it's so, misleading if you don't, you know, it's irresponsible, you know.
Very irresponsible, yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there saying there are no negative ETs, there are no negative entities, and I would be very worried, because it is the height of irresponsibility to take people out and open them up to anything that comes along.
Yeah.
Self-mastery means to be, or enlightenment actually means to be in knowledge of all of it, the whole enchilada, the good, the bad, the ugly, you know, the both sides of the coin, and have mastery over it.
Mm.
And so, you know, I'm still working on mastery over the dark, you know, so, but I don't, I acknowledge it. I know it's there.
Yeah.
I don't fear it, but I'm still working.
You don't feed it either.
Yeah, I don't feed it, but I acknowledge it's there. And I think because I do know of it, I do know it's there. I do know how it affects people, that I'm a major threat to it as most real light workers. You know, if you're not going to be getting hit, you're not doing your work. If you're not being challenged by social consciousness and by everything around you, you're not doing your work, you know, because you're just coasting, you know, with the status quo. So I think it's extremely irresponsible to not teach people how to heal unseen negative influences and know they're there, and be very careful about faker spirits or flattery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they'll flatter you and tell you you're the chosen one. And they create separation and division. They try to create a hierarchy, you know. And you get in the highest levels of consciousness, there is no hierarchy.
Mm.
You know, it's all one. When you're in unity consciousness, there's no hierarchy
at all.
And so, and there are levels of spiritual adeptness, you might say, or attainment. But as you become more and more enlightened, you realize that the Creator is omnipresent in all creation, you know. And the higher dimensional beings see us as part of creation that's kind of fallen behind, that needs a little help right now in our evolutionary process. They don't put us down or demean us or anything else, you know. They call us the forgotten gods, you know. Mm. We forgot about the God within us.
Everything,
connected to everyone and everything.
Yeah. No, I think that's an important point. And this is where, like, I've said to you, and I've been asked lately, we get asked, you know, how do you know this or this with people? And it's like, if they're not teaching you how to connect with your own God self, and they've got the answers, and everything's about going outside of yourself, run.
Yeah.
Or if it's about money, run, because everything's about going within. And it's, what I'm working out is that we're all each other's guides to connect within. It's just activating that stuff.
Yeah. I always like to check, you know, when I'm working with different beings, are they there for the highest good? You know, are they there for my highest good?
Mm-hmm.
Do they love me unconditionally is another thing that I sometimes like to ask as well.
Just
really like to make sure that, you know, you're working with beings that have good intent.
Yeah.
And it's about, you know, working out, are they malevolent? Are they benevolent?
Well, this all comes down to what do we constantly do? We constantly keep on clearing.
Yeah.
Isn't it? It's really, that's one of the key points that I've just stressed it. Especially if I'm working with people or we've done sessions or whatever, like you do, always ask if something's going on afterwards, have you done your clearing?
Yeah.
Because it's number one practice is just continuously do the clearing.
Yeah, before you meditate, before you channel, before you do anything spiritual, clear the energy first, you know, create sacred space.
Yeah.
I need to do a fly clearing here right now. But they're going for the eyes now. It's kind of interesting. But, you know, it's just important to realize that. And I'm not here to put down the New Age movement or anything else, but I'm here to say there's some extreme cautions. When you find a guru or something like that, again, it's external, you know.
Yeah.
You know, everything's external. You know, the guru is going to do this, the guru is going to do that. Guru means G-U-R-U, you know.
Yeah.
They're there to bend you inward to make your own personal connection and give you the tool. And, hopefully, you're going to go beyond your guru.
Yeah.
You know, eventually, you should actually leave your guru.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's more out there. There's more teachings out there. And people get caught up, and they get locked in, and they get dependent. And that's kind of sad when that happens as well.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, it's just kind of human nature to worship outside themselves or think somebody else is going to do everything for them and everything. And we've been programmed to in that. It's almost like a... like an external, we've been programmed to believe in an external God or external redemption, or, you know, Jesus is going to come and save me. I don't have to take personal responsibility for anything because I can blame God or the devil for everything, and Jesus is going to fix everything. You know, so it's sad, you know. But that wasn't his teachings at all.
Yeah,
they totally missed it. He said, "Do not worship me because you diminish the God within yourself."
Yeah.
And so,
ye're all gods,
All, and he said, ye are gods, the temple is within, you know. Ye are the children of God, you know. What happens when the child of God grows up? What does it become?
Mm.
You know, like Meister Eckhart, he said, you know, if nut seeds produce nut trees and pear seeds produce pear trees, what do God seeds produce?
You know?
and it really makes people think about it. You know? And so it's a process, you know, that we go through. The masters went through the process. One of the best examples of Christ consciousness is Yeshua, you know, and he started out and he said, you know, when he was born, he said, "I am the Son of Man," because that was his identity. He was Mary and Joseph's son. Yeshua ben Joseph is his name. And so that was his identity. And then later on, he started, you know, receiving messages, and he said, "I'm a messenger, you know, of God." You know, that was his identity now, because he was receiving messages. And then he realized he's actually a spirit. He wasn't this body and personality, but he came from source. He was a spirit. And then he said, you know, I'm the Son of God, you know, or the Son of God, or I shouldn't say the, because he should say, "I am a Son of God," or you could say the Son of God, because he realized it. He was one of the few people to realize that his spirit came from God or came from source. And the last thing he said in his soul was, "I am God," and that's told at oneness.
Yeah.
And so he became one with the one consciousness that encompasses all consciousness on all planes and dimensions throughout the multiverse, which sits right here. Mm. So he went in, he connected to that, expanded in awareness, actually took in all the planes and dimensions and all creation, became one with it, and now he's godlike. He's one with God, you know. And that's the real challenge for all of us to do, is not to externalize God, but to internalize God, to become one with God. And it doesn't mean you're God over others.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, truly, if you are in touch with God here, focusing on love, joy, and service, you serve others, and you're in full service mode. You're not here to overpower or manipulate in any way. That's a real lower level consciousness, because the source is like the sun. You know, it shines on everybody, even. It just keeps shining no matter what. It's beyond judgment. There's no ego. It doesn't have the ability to judge. And so if we can become like that, like the sun, you know, become the Son of God. You know?
Yeah.
That's S-U-N, you know. So, yeah, it's a little different outlook on it, but more accurate to what his teachings were all about.
No, definitely. And this is where, you know, that was part of the Archonic and Reptilian agenda, was to manipulate. Like, they couldn't hide who these beings were, because they became that well-known because of their teachings and what they were doing, that it couldn't be hidden. But what they could do was incorporate them into scriptures and texts that they could manipulate to sort of divert people. And when, like, we've been doing the same. My crayon's getting smashed right now.
Yeah, yeah.
But, that's a good thing, by the way.
It is. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, we've been doing a lot of work together since you've got here to Australia, and even beforehand, and, you know, we've been doing stuff ourselves for years. You've been doing it, you know, longer than what I've been alive, probably. But, you know, you come into reconnect with these beings that we know on a multidimensional level, and they're to not be used as gods, but to help assist us.
Yeah.
In reconnecting, and this is what it's about, is, you know, these are the real teachings, and they're sort of, it's almost like what I call Operation Starseed. We're down here in the thick of it all.
Yeah,
they've
done
their walk, and now they're sort of like the background crew doing what they can to help out, and this is where it's just, you know, everyone's got their own sort of, their own crew, and all interrelate somehow.
Yeah, we all got tossed down here without the manual. And so they made up a whole bunch of manuals, which are called religions.
Yeah.
Not knowing what the hell they're doing.
Yeah.
And they've done the best they can, not even realizing most of their manuals came from the ancient Anunnaki, you know.
Mm.
The bearded god, as they got their image of, the bearded god from the Anunnaki. That's where that came from. And so, you know, like Marduk was an Anunnaki, and he's the, you know, part of the Muslim religion. You know, the dinar has Marduk on it. You know, there's Enki, there's Enlil, you know. Enki was the all-loving creator god. He loved his creations. He wanted to continue to experiment and bring them more fully into godlike beings like they were. Enlil did not like that at all. He was the god of war and control, and he was a jealous, wrathful god. And he was, you know, destroyed village after village, you know, with sent his armies in. The armies didn't destroy the village. They just cleaned up. His ships destroyed the village, but... you know, it was a mess, and our ancient history is a real mess. We really don't know what really happened back then. But until we connect the ET connection, and that there were some really advanced beings that came down here that were very wise and very powerful. Some were brilliant in their mind, but spiritually backwards, and wanted to be worship, and there's others that were extremely spiritual, and we're here in full service mode. And so we have, because of those experiences, our religions are kind of warped and twisted, you know, according to which God that you had overseeing your area or your area. But I mean, this is a really long story. I can go further into depth, but now archaeology has proven this all to be true. And,
yeah.
And we're going to go check out some more archaeology soon.
Yeah, we've got a lot of stuff, especially the Egyptian and Pleiadian and original people connection. Now that alone, I can't wait for you to meet the Strongs in person, or just to see some of what's going on up that way, because that just completely rewrites history alone. And if anything, it actually validates what a lot of us are saying on another level. It just really, it's almost like a sledgehammer to the mind to expand it in another way that you just, you know, a lot of people don't think. But, it's forever learning, isn't it?
Yeah, and with what James was saying too, you know, about all the different expressions and the way that things can happen here on Earth. One time when I was doing an aura drawing for someone, I had a being come in and he was describing that exact scenario, but they like to use whatever you have on file or reference to pull up information.
Yeah.
And he was quite a funny one. He said, look, we're all ice cream, we're just different flavors, but we're all still ice cream.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he's speaking to me in my language of food.
We all came from the same cow. That's where the sacred cow came from.
Yeah. But we are. We're all essentially, you know, the same thing, but just different expressions of the same thing.
Yeah.
And that's how we learn about, you know, different ways of life, different things, different aspects.
Yeah. I just think about, you know, diversity. You know, it's, in my own experience, going to the void where all potentials exist, but there's nothing there, you know? And I was thinking about that, and after hanging out in there for a while, I just go, no wonder God created. And no wonder all this diversity was created. Because it experiences itself through creation, through all these diverse creations. I go, how boring for everybody, you know, to wear a white robe and sandals, have a beard, have curly hair, and, you know, only have one son, you know, one prophet, one teacher. Mm. I mean, how freaking boring would that
vanilla.
Be? Yeah. Yeah, everything's vanilla. Yeah, it's just like, it just doesn't work that way. And when you look at it that way, you know, in studying all the different teachings with all the different elders, you know, and, you know, it all boils down to we all came from the same source and we all returned to the same source.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of journeyings on a lot of different planes and dimensions in that. But the bottom line is that we're all family and we all came from the same source. And whatever you want to call it, you know, supreme intelligence, divine intelligence, you know, higher consciousness and energy, a golden white light. Everybody has different names for it, you know, a conscious light. You know, we've personified it, you know, with human names as well. The bottom line, it's beyond all that.
Yeah.
You know, it's so far beyond all that. But everything is that at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, so we can't. We can't say your truth is wrong because that's their experience.
Yeah.
And that's their culture.
That's their reality. And that's as valid as any other reality.
But there's always a bigger reality.
Yeah.
There's always a more expanded version.
Which encompasses it all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what I see is when you really wake up is when you shift and merge into unity consciousness, where you transcend all cultural and all religious boundaries and you see the creator in all creation, you know, and everyone as family. And really that's where we need to go on this planet. And that is basically universal law, you know, which is basically universal peace, brother, sister, love, individual freedom and prosperity for everyone. You know, the basic Cherokee saying is that if it isn't good for everyone, it isn't good.
Hmm.
And we have to start operating under universal law, and that is the salvation of this planet.
Yeah.
It's all going to be done through consciousness.
Hmm.
And these higher beings are pressing that consciousness on the earth, and it's tearing down the old draconian grid, the archon grid. The old consciousness is just being ripped apart right now, and we can all be a part of that by choosing not to express within that archon or draconian grid anymore. I mean, it's a very confining, very oppressive, it stops evolution. It's a very sick consciousness, and it, you know, it's where all the wars and the disease prophecies come from, and and you know, all that. That's what's holding that together. So we just have to stop participating on any way whatsoever. Stop supporting this old grid and start anchoring the new grid in. Welcoming the new grid in.
Another thing that's interesting with that too is a lot of that old energy, that draconian energy, is quite ritualistic based.
Yeah.
So they use like a lot of, you know, special dates and times and symbolisms, things like that. And what we're doing, I guess, as a mass consciousness is kind of superseding that. We're becoming, you know, magicians or alchemists that work with different tools and transform different things. And we're putting down the wands and we're putting down, you know, the tools, and we're going within to become true magicians of the heart and of the mind. And we're using that inner magic now.
Exactly.
It's like anchoring it all and bringing it through now, manifesting it into this vibration, which is going to change. It's changing it within and without, rather than, like I say to people, don't change what's outside of yourself, change within, and that will project outside of yourself, because that's where it all starts. And, you know, I think we just all need to, you know, pat ourselves on the back as well and not be so hard on ourselves, because so many people are wanting it to happen so quick and that, but we're dealing with so many people that aren't aware of what's going on, that's what makes it hard. But
you can see the breakdown.
Well, there's definitely a breakdown going on. Yeah, definitely a breakdown going on. We've got a few minutes. Is there anything you wanted to cover, you know, that you can think of?
I guess just looking at, you know, what we've gained from this experience, and what do you guys think that we'll be taking home with us?
I think it's going to be like an unfolding process. Like, it's really, for me, it's been about reconnecting, grounding, because I need a lot of grounding, considering how much freaking work I do.
You've had a funny few non-grounding experiences here that are reminding you to ground.
Reminding me to ground. But one thing I just, besides what you just said, while I'm just remembering this, you've had a lot of sort of spirit activity going on with yourself. Did you want to go into any of that? Because there's a lot of stuff trying to communicate. It seems that you talked about this at the ranch when Sol and I was there. We had an experience with a being, and it came to us because it wanted help to move on. And that's what happens with people like us, is that things get attracted to us. Because they know that we can communicate. They know that we pick up on them and can sense them. It seems like you've had a hell of a lot interacting.
I don't know where to start with that one, but one thing I've been having, the grandmothers here are singing and speaking to me from the fifth dimension, and they've already ascended, and they're really trying hard to communicate with the people here on this dimension to keep, you know, to send them love and hope and things like that, but they're not, because they've lost their connection to spirit and earth, and they, you know, they've been kind of pulled off of that, you know, with, especially with all the food and the sugars and the, you know, the diabetes and all the things going on here. It's, you know, if you're sick, you're not going to be connecting in, and the oppression and all the other things, and it's sad, you know, but they're singing and they're praying and they're really trying to help, you know, the people here get through this shift, through these times. And so we connected them up with our Star Nation friends and our other people, so they're all going to work together on helping, you know, lift that energy that we've been feeling here.
Yeah.
That really sad, oppressive energy that, you know, there's two energies here. One is you've got the energies of, you know, Uluru and Katajuta, which are just off the scale, and then you've got that network.
Yeah.
And that same Archon grid is here. And they're going to help tear that down, which is going to be great.
G'day everyone, we had to wrap it up there. The SD card filled up and we had to wrap up the show anyway. So Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays, or Hanukkah, or whatever you are. And from all of us, and have a safe and happy holiday and New Year.
All right, g'day mate.
Thanks for watching.